This is KCLA FM, Los Angeles. Now broadcasting from coast to coast and around the world on web radio at KCLAFM.com. Stay tuned for more.
You ready?
WebRadio.com, your internet radio destination for the new millennium. Live anytime.
On any day.
From anywhere. It's WebRadio.com. Nothing can compare to what's happening across the network. So come listen to this station live at WebRadio.com with music,
news,
sports,
whatever your taste,
it's there. Web Radio also has some cool giveaways all the time. Be sure to check it out. WebRadio.com.
You're listening to the Dating Advice Girl Radio Show on 99.3 KCLA FM, your source for dating advice in Los Angeles.
Press play, fast forward, nonstop, we have a beaten path before us. It was all there. Sight. Come on, people, we have all seen the signs, so we may never get back to the old school.
Hey singles, it's Erin, the Dating Advice Girl, here at 99.3 KCLA FM in Los Angeles, California. That's right. How are we doing? I hope we're doing well out there, wherever you're listening from and whoever you're listening with. So we are here with the fourth episode, the fourth group of the dating panel interviews. I'm so happy, and I've gotten some really great feedback from you about what you're hearing and about the things that, you know, are being discussed on these episodes. I'm really happy to hear that, because for me it is a bit of a passion project, a passion project in this podcast, in my podcast. I love doing this. I love hearing from different groups of people about what their experiences are, and I think it's just helpful. And besides being entertaining, it's helpful for all of us to kind of understand each other and see similarities in ourselves and others and just hear someone else's experience, you know? So this group is really great. And I said this in another episode too. I love how each group has a different dynamic. You know, some groups are more lighthearted, some groups are more serious. You know, it's just, I love the dynamic of a group. And when different individuals get together, there's a different group dynamic. So this group is awesome. This group involves Ben, Brielle, Jiminika, and Daniel, and they're super awesome, and they bring up some really interesting topics, you know, because as you know, if you've heard, whether it be this round of interviews this year or the ones I did last year for the dating panel series, I kind of just throw a question or two out there, and then the group usually just takes it on whatever journey they want to take it on. You know, whatever comes up for them in the space of dating, sex, relationships, all these things, they bring it up, and I love it because they just go with it, and rather than me orchestrating everything, it's like, here's a question to start, you guys take it away. So without further ado, I'm gonna let them take it away. So again, this is group four of a dating panel interviews, Ben, Brielle, Jiminika, and Daniel, and here we go.
Everybody, okay, tell me your names, please.
I'm Ben. Karen.
And Brielle.
Jiminika.
Okay. Awesome, thank you guys for being here. So just to start off on a possibly hilarious note, what are your thoughts about dating, or what does the word dating mean to you? Anyone can start.
Complication. Dating is tricky. I think it's very much
not as exciting in the fact that you kind of know it might go left faster than normal with dating apps. I just got swiped on the other day and someone was like, so, you like to suck dick? And I'm like, well, this is a good talk.
I feel like it's gotten progressively worse over the years. I feel like I got more dates when I was 21 a couple of years ago, just going to a bar or going somewhere and a guy would come up to me, whereas now I'm 24 and no one comes up to me anymore because everyone's just on their phones, used to, you know, dating apps and things like that.
Yeah, dating is sort of foreign to me because I ended up meeting the person, the very first person I ever dated, which sounds really cliche. I the whole way through, I was like, there's no way that this is what's happening. There's no way. This is all going to fall apart because I'm not like some rom-com or something. But that's just the way that it turned out, and I had to trust that the thing that my heart was feeling was actually the truth, even though I was very scared that it was some sort of like cliche story. But I really don't know. I talk to my friends who are dating nowadays, and they find it really difficult. I find, especially with digital dating, seems oftentimes very impersonal, and people feel emboldened to act in ways that they wouldn't normally act in real life. So that sounds kind of terrifying to me.
What you did on your first date, because maybe that's the secret.
Yeah.
Well, we were introduced by friends, and then after that we went to dinner, and then just haven't really been apart since, so it was kind of super easy. Yeah. I won the lottery. Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but yeah.
I think it's gotten better in some ways. In there is always like a tailing off, like with the apps, where then it gets inundated with people that seem like they're the garbage people have now taken over the app or whatever. But at the same time, the things have gotten more efficient in some ways. So all in all, slightly better. Efficient, time efficient. You only have so much time in your life, and every time you have to trade it. And some people are willing to, I mean, I guess that also goes to like the first date. Everyone has a much higher standards on their first date than you would if you'd been with the person for, you know, 5 years. The things that you would let them get away with are way higher than somebody on the first date. So the same thing goes with the apps and everything else, that people set up criteria and they're weeding people out, maybe too flippantly, but on some level they're valuing their time, maybe.
That's true, but I feel like the whole convenience thing, that's what makes me upset, because I feel like people just want the easy way and they don't want to put in the work, or they don't want to be brave and go up to somebody in person. It's just easier on an
app. It's true, and it also destroys the idea that anyone is special.
Right.
When there's abundance and abundance.
Exactly.
Abundance. That's the negative side of it, for sure.
Well, I wonder too if, you know, you're setting up this dating profile, which is forcing you to label yourself or to describe yourself. And I think humans are really complicated creatures. And something that is organic about dating in real life is that when you go into a room, you start to read the complicated nature of a person, and you know, you understand them in a deeper way. And so I wonder if there's something challenging about the fact that in order to use this kind of a system, you have to oversimplify yourself and label yourself in order to make you consumable, almost.
Yes.
But you still have to do that on the first date as well. I think it was Aaron that got me to see that some of those things aren't necessarily bad, that you have to go through a certain set of rituals and show your, basically prove that you're not crazy by doing X, Y, and Z. And I guess from that standpoint, it's like, well, why do we have to talk about this nonsense? But it does make sense from the standpoint of, I'm just showing I'm not crazy by doing all the things that society wants me to do on a first date. And so whether it's first date or first message of an app at all, it seems like you just, it's about feeling out what you're supposed to do and then making the statement, I'm not crazy.
Cool. All right, so we're talking about matching levels of crazy. So for those of you who, let's say are, you know, in the dating scene now, or hey, your stories from friends or family, like, I mean, what do you think some of the additional challenges are about dating right now? Like, in 2017, like, are there any things that you're concerned about other than just, like, online dating profiles and, okay, yeah, I see. Already there's thoughts. Okay, go, yes.
I think for me,
I have been running into guys that, like, fetishize me because I'm a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's tricky to weed them out. You're like, oh, it starts off good, and then they're like, so. And I'm like, no. Left, unsafe. So I think that's kind of tricky, moving through, and also knowing if, when they ask, what do you do? And being a sex educator, they're like, oh, so that means X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, no, not at all. Doesn't mean I'm giving you any free stuff. Doesn't mean I can do all these tricks. Maybe, maybe not. Not doing that. So those are the things, my struggles. So.
Mm-hmm.
How do you differentiate between being fetishized and somebody who's maybe you fit their preference?
The wording. I think sometimes the different wording, and there's, of course, there's preference, but the way that you approach me and the things that you say, like, I can't even come up with anything off the top of my head, but you automatically know, yeah, as someone that's dealt with it, you're just like, oh, okay, this isn't like a good word. Like, this is like something you've seen and you want to try it out. Or they'll wonder, oh, so I've never been with a black girl before. I've been wanting to try it. I'm not an ice cream. Like, this is not just something you try. And that's something I've run across more so being in LA, which I've only been here like a little under 2 years. So, I mean, it could be everywhere, but that's just my experience with it.
I wonder, I guess I don't have any personal experience, but doesn't the idea that you're dating based on preference, like, isn't that built on a lot of assumptions and stereotypes in the first place? That, like, if I say I prefer dating black people, then inherent in that statement is I think most black people act the same way or have these shared qualities. Like, is that not inherently troubling, the idea of dating by preference?
I wouldn't think, like, oh, if I date a white guy, they're all white guys are the same. So for me, it'd be like, no. It's like saying I date this kind of woman, and they're all the same kind of woman.
Also, preference, it's going to be whether it's race or anything else. How are you going to decide, like, this is what I'm looking for, if you don't start having some types of preference? Like, even if you were to keep race out of it, if it was like, okay, you know, women that are stronger are preferable to me or something like that, if I'm still eliminating, like, 50% of the female population at that point. So it's a complex thing, but I think everybody's doing it on some level. Even if they're just like being attracted to an abusive guy, they're still preferring that to everything else.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily compare those two things, because abusive is like it's like a mode of action, or it's like a quality about that person based on the things that they do. But saying like that you prefer a black person is making a lot of assumptions about the things that they do. And I mean, I guess I'm wondering if it's a more healthy world if we try to create a culture in which we create space for people to show up as they are, and that way everybody gets sort of like an equal playing field when it comes to dating, as opposed to like walking in with a series of assumptions. Like, wouldn't it be more fair if I got to meet you and not make any assumptions about you?
It sounds way more fair, but what I'm thinking is that in society, it's not going to work, because you're going to have all of these women that are, let's say, they're the 8, 9, and 10 category on the 1 to 10 scale in terms of how society views their attractiveness, and they're going to have a whole plethora of people trying to get their attention. And if they have to just go through and be like, well, I have zero preference, and this guy may be 30 pounds overweight, but I'm going to sit down with him and be open to everybody, it's just going to be like a big waiting list, right? It just can't work. At some point, she's going to have to start filtering.
Yeah, I think everyone has like a thing that they like. Like, I like guys that can lead. Guys can't lead. Not saying I can't work with it, but that's like a preference. Not saying like I like you because you're a white man with dark hair. That's it's kind of different, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Like liking a guy who can read, there's a lot of qualities that I guess about somebody who reads, like, that's useful, I guess, in a relationship, like liking a guy that can read. I still haven't heard, I guess, like a plausible example of like comparing like a trait, like I like a person who can read, like I guess, you know, in a way it'd be like saying I like blonde women. And so in that same sense, like, I just don't really like compare that to reading in a way, I guess, because there's just a superficiality about one as opposed to another, I feel like, I guess.
I was just thinking about in my head, but yeah. I think still being, like, a blonde woman is like, oh, okay, you can change that. I can't change that I'm a black woman. And that some people just approach because I'm a black woman. So I think those kind of difference. That's a big difference. And, of course, people have preferences. I feel like if you don't have a preference, like you said, how are you going to filter what works for you?
So even without race in it, there's still going to be race in it. If somebody says the most beautiful black woman is Halle Berry and somebody else says the most beautiful black woman is Serena Williams, there's a lot embedded that is sort of cultural and racial about that that is still just talking about two black people, and still it's just preference that they haven't even thought about, perhaps. Right?
Well, I mean,
or am I taking it too far?
I think there's a lot being said there, perhaps, that could be explored as far as, like, race and, like, the ways that we've used race and even the subcategories of race in a way, but... I mean, we don't need to that, but I just find it troublesome in general. I guess race as a filtering system for people in their dating, because I think there's just a huge world of possibility that if you block people out of your life or you block people out of your experience based on these assumptions you make based on race, there's just a whole world of, like, what your life could look like if you would just bypass, like, that little level of the unknown or the discomfort of somebody based on your assumptions of them.
I like it. We're all posing questions. It's great.
But so, it's okay to get objectified for knowing how to read.
Well, I mean, I guess maybe that's not fair to people who don't know how to read. It's just like...
But isn't that just mean you have certain standards, right? Like, is a standard different from a preference, or is it basically the same thing? It's kind of different but the same.
I think, yeah, probably what issues... Yes. The difference is probably some of those are traits and attributes, and some are... things that are more fuzzy.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I love it. So let's change gears kind of completely. And I want to ask about consent. So have any of you or all of you learned about consent in school or through parents or maybe pop culture? So when you learned about consent, where did you learn about it, if you learned about it? Anyone can start.
I learned about it in school. And also, my mom just kind of gave me, like, a brief talk. My dad never talked to me about it, but I think it's more of, like, a cultural thing. He's from Croatia and very traditional, and I think, like, talking about those kinds of things is just kind of weird to him, at least. Whereas, like, my mom was born here, and it's just kind of, I don't know, normal, at least a little bit. That's how I feel.
I got like a brief talk by my mom, but I had to do like my own research to like really know what consent was and how to have those conversations with people and how it's okay to change my mind whenever I want to. Like, that wasn't anything I learned in school ever. I wish, but no, not for me.
Oh, I answered this already. For me, it seemed like it was just embedded in everything everybody was saying, because it seems common sense and natural, but I don't recall an actual class, although I remember it being kind of behind a little bit of everything.
I remember, you know, in sex ed, having conversations around the idea specifically of, like, rape, but I, as an adult, I have now had conversations with a lot more nuance around consent, and those, I think, are even more powerful because... the idea of rape, I think the way that it was explained to me or the context in which it was explained, I feel like that feeling about that you shouldn't rape a woman is almost protective of, like, men in the sense of using women as property rights, in the sense of, like, I want my offspring to be my offspring, and that's, like, that was sort of the lens I felt like that was placed over the whole thing was protecting men's access to women from other men. And I think the conversation that I've had since then is much more feminist-based, perhaps. And also, it applies and it has benefits for everybody. And that conversation has been extended to, like, you don't have my permission to touch my body. You don't have my permission to interact with me in this sort of a way. You don't have my permission to say these sort of things to me, you know, that are sexualized or in a sort of sexually belittling way. I think that's really powerful because it creates mutual respect and it creates autonomy. And I think it's a better conversation than, like, women shouldn't be raped. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's sort of, that's, that in itself is a little patronizing. I guess it's the essence of patronizing.
Yeah. You know? Do you feel like consent, you bring up an interesting point. Do you feel like consent is almost limiting in terms of gender? Because I do feel like there's an assumption that, I don't want to get into what statistics and how many people, like, what gender is assaulted more than others, but I do feel like I've heard from a lot of male-identifying people that they've been violated, and they've been ignored because of their gender.
A male has an eating disorder, but it's kind of the same thing, like, you hear about it and you're like, oh, it's okay, but when it's a girl, it's really, really serious. So it's, like, kind of similar concept, just because you're a male.
It's kind of tragic.
Yeah.
Because there's so many men, males, young, old, whoever, that have been sexually assaulted, and people, again, are just like, well, you're fine. But their trauma continues on, just like women's trauma continues on. So why shouldn't there be safe spaces for them? Why shouldn't they be able to go to the police and say, this happened to me, and people are like, oh, well, she was hot.
Maybe somebody, though, in the future, you know, people will sort of retell their story. I mean, because we kind of saw that with, like, the, like, Roman Polanski, his, victim came out. I mean, it's assuming that what happened in the 70s was true, came out and, like, wrote a book, because she was just kind of like, well, I'm fine from all the things that I went through. And I think that also sometimes it's the way the victim reacts that allows society to, like, forgive or not, you know, which is interesting and weird, too, because it's, like, the same crime either way. But she, like, wrote a book kind of to, I don't want to say capitalize in the monetary sense, because she already had money, but to sort of take the new platform and her new chance to kind of, like, in this environment to tell her story, and she just felt that was kind of what she needed to do. So that maybe there will be that in the future for some guys that feel in the closet about seeing things that happened to them. Maybe.
But I think also there's this there's a series of assumptions made within about the male libido that work against men who have been sexually assaulted, because there's this assumption that all men are sex crazed in a way, or like that the fundamental nature of being a man is that you want to have sex with as many people as possible, as much as humanly possible. And I know from my experience as well as having conversations with many men that that's just not the case all the time. And I think that assumption works against men culturally, and it makes it hard for them to feel like they're going to be taken seriously. And touching on what you said about the gay culture, I do think that it is going to be important in the next period of gay culture that we have a meaningful conversation around consent, because I know as a gay man that in being in gay spaces, especially like gay party spaces, that there are plenty of times in which my consent has been violated, maybe not in like a really traumatic sort of way, but even so, we need to establish human-wide, species-wide, that respect is essential to all of our experience. And when you go up to somebody and you violate their consent, you are essentially making a statement that what you want is more meaningful than what they want. In fact, you don't even care to check what they want, and that you have no respect for them, because if you did, you would actually ask that question of what they wanted. So, yeah.
That's great. All right, so shifting gears once more to end on a happy note, if you could share one positive, something that's worked for you in your dating and relationship life that you think would be helpful for someone else, what would that be? Brielle? No? Yes?
Not yet.
I would say that just kind of approaching everything with the idea that there's something to learn from this experience, that the thing I'm in now, it seems like a lot of people have a way of, you know, making a list. This is exactly what I'm looking for, and I'm looking for these perfect things, and they go through dating, like trying to see, does this person match up to my list? And I look at it more as there's a person in front of me, you know, we're developing a relationship. What can I learn, either about myself, about what I'm looking for, about this other person? And that usually seems to work, because even if you're in a bad situation, you're in that bad situation, and you got yourself in that bad situation. So there's a reason why you're in the bad situation. Sometimes that's the most interesting or fulfilling thing that you can get out of that whole relationship.
And being present in the present moment and not having expectations about how anything is going to go from step to step to step is really the healthiest way to try and navigate that path together.
I think also for me is going into situations with intention. Like, I tend to go in here and have a good time. Whether this goes left or it goes right, I'm going to enjoy myself, and I will at least have a good story. But also, like, knowing yourself, I think that takes a long time to kind of figure out who you are, and that helps you figure out what you want. And so, me being 29, I'm still learning. But it's gotten a lot better since I finally put my foot down at, like, 25. I was like, okay, let's stop this nonsense. Like, what do we actually want? Like, what's going to be good for me instead of just playing games?
That's awesome! And tell me your names one more time, starting over here.
I'm Ben Karen.
I'm Riel.
I'm Jamaica.
I'm Daniel.
All right, and there you go. So good, right? So good. I love it. Yeah, and again, this group came up with a bunch of other topics to talk about that we hadn't talked about, that we hadn't talked about in other groups, which was just great. It just, that's where it went for them, and I love it. So thanks again to Ben, Jamanika, Daniel, and Brielle. You guys are amazing. And I hope all of you enjoyed this episode. We have one more group. I'm so sad it's coming to an end once again. One more group for the next episode. And I think it's actually, it's a mishmash of participants from some of the other prior groups into one super group. So yeah, that'll be the next episode. But thanks again for listening and supporting. And again, I really hope that everyone's getting something out of this. Share it with your friends, tell your people. And again, as always, the video of this group will be posted soon. You can see that on my website, thedatingadvicegirl.com, or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/thedatingadvicegirl. And as always, I'm on all the social medias, facebook.com/thedatingadvicegirl. I'm on Instagram at datingadvicegrl. So dating advice girl. Yeah, or search my name, Erin Tillman. I actually have two Instagrams, but that's a whole other story. So thank you guys so much for listening, guys, gals, and everyone in between. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next episode.
We're faded silhouette, we're coming on.